Tonight's gospel reading is from Genesis 39, 6b to 22. Now Joseph was handsome and good looking. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Lo, having me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my hand. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except yourself, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And although she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie with her or to be with her. But one day, when he went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house were there in the house, she caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled out of the house, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to insult us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment with me and fled and got out of the house." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came home. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant, whom you have brought among us, came into me to insult me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment with me and fled out of the house." When his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's care all the prisoners who were in the prison. And whatever was done there, he was the doer of it. The word of the Lord.
I've been struck lately, frequently, by the limitations of my own perspective. Sort of how the accumulations of my particular experiences, my location in the world, the way my brain works, limits what I can know. I only have two eyes on the front of my head. Spiders have like eight eyes on all sides of their heads. Can you imagine their perspective? Goats and geckos can see in almost every direction at once. Did you know that goats and geckos can see in almost every direction at once? Our vision as finite human beings is really very pretty limited. Our capacity for comprehension is sort of minute when you think of the vast expanse of space and time. As separate selves, we're really incapable of seeing that much. When I read this story from my perspective, obviously, I thought, well, shoot, isn't that a great story to have in the founding narratives of Scripture? A false rape accusation that lands an innocent man in jail. Great. I can hear the alt-right going, woo-hoo! And I wasn't wrong about that. A quick internet search for Joseph and Potiphar's wife led me to the Return of Kings blog, or ROK. ROK aims to usher in the return of the masculine man and aid you in your exit from the cave of blue pill ignorance and into the red pill's harsh but essential light. Women and hetero people are not welcome to comment on this site. ROK features a wide variety of bloggers writing on subjects such as how the equality movement tyrannizes men, how rape culture was manufactured to wage an unjust war against men why returning to medieval Christian mindset could save masculinity. Or this feature. Woman has online meltdown after being rejected by a man for being too muscular. There's also one about Emma Watson's chest. In one of his blogs, Mr. Oscar Zack uses this very story of Potiphar's wife to discuss how women have changed very little since antiquity. We're always trying to take power from men by making false accusations. And not only that, we force our victims, according to Oscar, into fat acceptance in an attempt to enslave men to undesirable women. I don't know about you, but I think Oscar's perspective is limited. But I have to say that reading the Christian commentary on this text wasn't 1,000 times better. John Chrysostom, a much beloved church father from the 4th century, uses the story of Potiphar's wife as an occasion to sermonize on the satanic female. The irrational, immoral, lascivious creature who lurks about hoping to ensnare good, rational, and virtuous men. And unfortunately, this sort of thinking is a defining characteristic of early Christian attitudes. And it goes on to last a long time, to the detriment of women, obviously, and I would say to human sexuality in general. The story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife likely has a history much older than Genesis. A similar story appears on an ancient Egyptian papyrus from like 1200 BC. And I mean, really, I don't believe we're going to unearth what the ancient Egyptian was thinking or meaning when he or she wrote it. But I can tell you, throughout the history of the Western Christian Empire, Mrs. Potiphar is pretty much reviled. But apparently also fascinating to men. Mysterious, seductive, predatory. Really a kind of stock character, the femme fatale. That woman, according to a more recent work, who extorts a cry of lust from a man by the lascivious contortions of her body, who breaks the will, masters the mind of a king by the spectacle of her quivering bosoms, heaving belly, and tossing thighs, the symbolic incarnation of world-old vice, the goddess of immortal hysteria, a monstrous beast of the apocalypse, indifferent, irresponsible, insensible poisoning. What is that all about? Fear or fantasy? Potiphar's wife is a very popular subject in Western art. Rembrandt did an etching of the scene considered unprecedented in its erotic candor because of its explicit rendering of Mrs. Potiphar's, I am not quite sure how to say this in church, lower lady parts. Apparently, there was a notion that percolated from antiquity to the 17th century in Holland that a woman's reproductive organs hungered insatiably for the male seed. As a woman, I just wouldn't quite put it like that. In Rembrandt's etching, she looks desperate. He looks revolted. I mean, geez, is this what happens when you let men do the thinking? Poor Mrs. Potiphar. The text doesn't really call for all this. She isn't even lingered on as a character in the story in the Bible. I mean, she doesn't have a name. We don't know if she had a quivering bosom. Her thighs are not even mentioned. We know very little about her. She seems more of a sort of plot device, really, to show how this upstanding guy, Joseph, was helped by the Lord, showing him steadfast love. She just moves the plot along, Joseph needs to go to prison down to the depths so then he can rise to the heights, become second only to the Pharaoh. So his brothers, the Hebrew people, end up moving to Egypt and eventually becoming enslaved so they can be freed in the Exodus. It's a big story, but she's not really that much of an important character in that narrative. Nevertheless, she gets a ton of attention in the history of interpretation. Like she's some giant red flag warning men that the danger is real. Beware of female desire. And actually, it turns out, beware of the body in general. Joseph was a great hero to Christian monastics. These are some lyrics from a third century hymn. May my love be pure and may sinful love disgust me. Then, like the unpolluted Joseph, may I shun the enticements of the flesh, and having cast off the chains of the body, I may be free of sin and leave to the world the spoils of the flesh. It is time to put embrace at a distance. Maybe I'm being reductive here, but doesn't that just seem sad? Praying for disgust and to be free from the chains of the body? I mean, yeah, that is from a long time ago, but I don't think the Western Christian world has got over this yet. The guest from On Being just last night said, the Western world is astoundingly disembodied still. This stuff is still screwing people up. We still haven't figured out how to embrace bodily existence, how to love it. Being dissatisfied or ungrateful for our particular bodies, our flesh, it's a way of life here. Like we can't shake the belief that if we could exist somehow in the realm of pure reason or pure spirit or technology, someplace unaffected by digestion, an age, we would be saved if we could only get our minds to transcend this physical support system. I mean, this really isn't the Christian story where God gets a body. But the Western world has never been able to shake it. Joseph is pure reason. Potiphar's wife is ruled by passionate desire. He is superior to her in every way. She is a mere nuisance to his dignity. Will she ever be redeemed? Jewish interpreters in the rabbinical period spend a lot of time speculating about this scene as well. But it feels really different. There's no sense that it would be desirable to cast off the chains of body. It's more like, how did Joseph deal with the decision, with the situation, as a decidedly embodied human? They wonder a lot about Joseph's state of mind and body. Was he tempted or not? Possibly he intended to lie with Mrs. Potiphar's wife, but was saved by God. The rabbis wonder about this phrase in the text. Joseph one day entered the house to do his work. They wonder if this is sort of a euphemism. He entered the house to do his work, but there was not a man inside. The rabbis are funny. I mean, really, they are. They wonder if he enters the house to do his work, but finds there is no man inside. Do I need to spell it out? Do you get the drift? He wants to be with her, but his man parts won't cooperate. The rabbis are so human in what they wonder. In most rabbinic commentaries, Joseph is decidedly flesh and blood, and Mrs. Potiphar is actually not all bad all the time. Because Joseph is so beautiful, and her husband is a eunuch. There's a word in the text that could be translated that way. So you can see where she's coming from. For many Jewish interpreters, Mrs. Potiphar is a sympathetic character, not actually a satanic predator. You know, it doesn't seem like a bad idea to wake up every morning and pray to God that we might be actively aware of the limitations of our perspective. To be aware of the limitations of our perspective might give us a reason to hope. The story of Joseph and Potiphar's wife also appears in the Quran. And in Islam, she gets a name. A name. Zuleika. In the Quran, Joseph is a man with a body and blood, and you even get a glimpse that this man has feelings. I'm not kidding, feelings. The Quran says she wanted to involve herself with him, and he wanted to involve himself with her. So there was like a mutual enthusiasm for the encounter. But Joseph is prevented from doing wrong by a sign from God. One Islamic interpreter says, she locked the doors, he went to loosen his trousers. When suddenly the figure of Joseph's father appears in the room, and this effectively dampens the heat of the encounter. As in the Jewish commentaries, there's some humor here. Not a characteristic you find in Christian interpretation, as much as one might like. In Islamic tradition, the other women in the city hear about this encounter, and they start gossiping about Zuleika. What a shameful way for a distinguished woman to behave with a slave. So Zuleika invites them all to a tea party. And then when they all get seated, Zuleika passes out fruit, and then she gives them knives to cut the fruit. And when they're all, you know, starting to have the tea and the fruit in their hands, she brings out Joseph. And he is so beautiful that all the women of the city are mesmerized. In fact, they are so caught up in his beauty that they cut themselves with the knives and they don't even know they're doing it. They don't even feel the pain. He is so gorgeous that all the women become just as desirous as Zuleika. This sort of emphasis on Joseph's irresistible beauty and this humanizing of Potiphar's wife paves the way for later interpreters to read the relationship as a love story, more than a tale of an evil satanic female. I find it refreshing. The Prophet Muhammad is said to have said, when I met Joseph, I saw that Allah had blessed him with half of the beauty of the whole world, while the other half had been spread over the rest of it. That's a lot of beauty. The story gets told and retold in Islam and expanded in some versions after Joseph goes to jail on his own accord, actually, to get some peace from all the women of the city who desire him. Zuleika becomes despondent. She can't stand to live without him. She can't sleep. Her husband ends up losing power. She becomes not only impoverished and homeless, but blind from crying out her eyes for Joseph, literally. But then one day she smells him go by in the street, and she throws herself down in front of him. She loses consciousness. Then he loses consciousness. I don't really know what all that's about. But when he comes to, he wants to help her. He says, oh, Zuleika, what do you need? She says, I just need to see you one more time. So he prays to God, and she not only gets her sight back, but her youth is restored, and they get married. And when they finally consummate that relationship, Joseph is like, see, isn't this so much better than it would have been if we hadn't yet pledged ourselves to each other in love? I mean, it's a little happily ever after. but I like it anyway. In Islam, the community of readers, the lovers of God, and the receivers of love transform Potiphar's wife from the feared woman to a woman forgiven, restored, and fulfilled. In Sufi text, she becomes a woman to be emulated and admired. The passion-stirring beauty of the luminous Joseph comes to stand for the divine source of light and truth and love. Zuleika's longing for Joseph comes to represent the soul's longing for God. There is boundless love and fathomless sorrow in pursuit of union with the elusive beloved. And the readers are invited to relate to this longing. She is not a lascivious woman crazed by a terrifying appetite. She is the self bewailing the beloved's distance, inaccessibility, absence. She is longing to be held in the arms of grace. And Zuleika is loved by Muslims for her passionate love for God. Muslims name their baby girls for her. In this time where division is threatening to wreck us, I think it'd be good to recognize that we can get at more truth together than any one of us can get to on our own. I am hoping that there are all sorts of things that I can't see that are beautiful. Mrs. Potiphar doesn't dig herself out of the depths of infamy on her own accord. She doesn't redeem herself. The community works this mercy over time, over a long time, and with many, many different perspectives. I know that Chrysostom and the Return of the King's Guy and my enemies and friends, Jews, Buddhists, Christian, Muslims, Sikhs, and you and me aren't characters in a story exactly. But are we, in a way? Part of some long and complicated narrative, and though it seems nearly impossible to see from our perspective, I believe we can trust that God will work through the community, because how else does God work? But through the crazy, stupid, beautiful, messed up, uptight, imaginative, creative people of God to redeem the world. And I mean all of it over time. We need each other, and each other broadly defined. And it's not that easy, but I think we should dwell in hope that we can barely see, and act in hope, and act some more in hope. Whether it's letting a stray cat in, or undermining the system, we have this communion to say we need each other.